a shot in the dark. Where he sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Episode 261. Whew. Early morning episode. A little coffee slurp for emphasis. I just spilled coffee all over the table. I had to stop and clean it up. Yeah, you know, there's no use crying over spilled coffee, as I say. That is what they say, right? It would not be the first time I've cleaned up coffee, that's for sure. So, sorry about the rerun yesterday. I was just like, oh my gosh. So I got back from my travels over the weekend. Well, I'm being texted by Miley, by Michael Miley at the moment. He's trying to get me to talk about something. He's sending me an article. It's going to have to be 262 because I don't have time to stop and read an article. See, I told you people send me stuff. I love it when people send me stuff. Yeah, so I got back from my travels from Flint over the weekend, and man, night before last, I just had brutal insomnia. I just had a ton of stuff on my mind, and I could not shut off. And you know how you do that, like, you know, you're kind of like not going to sleep, and then the fact that you're not going to sleep is start stressing you out, and then you start doing that math. Like every time you wake up, you look at the clock, and you start doing the math. And my software said that I actually got a little bit of sleep, but I think I use a memory foam mattress, and I don't think those accelerometer things work as well with the, but I don't like to use the other option. It can listen to your room towards you, but I have a CPAP machine, and that kind of makes some noise, and I kind of, every time I roll over, the hose flaps, and so that is the only guy I'm going to have to get a less memory foamy mattress if I'm going to get accurate numbers out of my or get one of those things that sits on your wrist. There's one that like measures your movement and pulse and all that stuff. That's probably what I need to do, or just sleep and see how I feel in the morning. I'm not into the whole self-recording kind of like, you know, captured life, you know, thing, but I kind of am, you know, I'm not like a psycho about it, but there's certain things I like to know about. Anyway, so I just had this horrible, horrible insomnia, and you dive back in the grind. This has been my life here lately. It's like, you know, 4 to 6 days out of town. I come back, I have X amount of bar hours that I put in with this client here in Denver. And so then it's just, I end up behind a coffee bar for 3 straight days or 2.5 straight days or whatever. And then I'm back on a plane, and it's just been like that for the last few weeks again. So I get back and just brutal, brutal insomnia. And then I have a 12-hour shift to work. So I try to schedule my bar hours all at once so I can kind of get them done and then get back to working on, you know, this thing and Calyx, my apostolate. And so I come in, I was a zombie. I was absolutely a zombie. I was just, people were like, hey, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm really exhausted. I said, oh, you look tired. I'm like, I am tired. You know, I can hide it sometimes, you know, I can do pretty well. I can caffeine up and do my job. And luckily it started off crazy dead slow, but we actually ended up getting fairly busy, and we actually had a really good day yesterday. Which this time of year, we're not normally open the week before Christmas. This is kind of a new experiment hours wise around here in the Institute. We've gone far enough away from the academic kind of being the thing that defines us that we're kind of not on the academic schedule anymore. We're more on the kind of a company schedule. And so this is kind of our first year that it's like next week is Christmas and we're here. You know, it's been I don't really know what to expect, and I'm kind of surprised. It's like it's dead, but then a lot of people are coming out to mass, and then it gets really busy, and then it was kind of steady in the afternoon. Kind of impressed. It was pretty good day yesterday. The numbers looked really solid, and I love it. When I'm tired, man, I want to work. When I'm tired, I want to pull shots, make coffee, and keep moving, because if I sit down, then it's just like, brrr, you just get really tired. So anyway, so that was yesterday, just slogging through as I pulled my classic line out. I'm like, are you going to make it? And I'm like, you know what? If I had a dollar for every shift I've worked on next to no sleep, propped up by caffeine, we could buy one heck of a bottle of wine. I mean, I wouldn't be rich, but we'd have a really nice bottle of wine. It's about where the numbers are, I think. So, and then, a couple of interesting things happened during the shift yesterday. Frollo came in and spent the afternoon hanging out and working and stuff. And Father Michael O'Loughlin. And it's funny, this is I haven't seen Father Riley as much since he's gotten back. I mean, we have our old chaplain back again, and this was something he used to do, but I need to go to confession, right? And Father Michael is a good friend of mine. And here's, I'm going to do a sidebar for a second on confession with friends. So I have the curse or the privilege, a little bit of both, of having a lot of friends who are priests. And of my friends that are priests, some of them love hearing their friends' confessions. Some of them hate hearing their friends' confessions. It's just kind of it's interesting. I'd say probably 60-65% of them that I know like to hear their friends' confessions. I have a few friends who are priests who are just like not down for that at all. I mean, they'll do it and they'll be gracious about it and they'll do their job, but they remember, what was that sandwich at McDonald's back in the day? The McDLT. It was like a BLT with they're trying to do like the BLT with a hamburger on it. It was the McDLT, and it had this this two-sided container where the side with the hot cheese and the meat and the bun would go over here, and the side with the cool lettuce and all that would be over here. And then you put them together when you bought the sandwich, and their thing was you keep the hot side hot and the cool side cool, right? So it's kind of like, I think that some priests have the McDLT principle when it comes to confessions with friends. They want to keep the hot side hot and the cold side cold. They want to keep the priest side priest and the friend side friend, you know. But most of my friends, the ones I'm closest to, are like super down for it, you know. In fact, I love getting dibs on a priest's first confession when they're friends of mine. You know, it's like, I love getting that. And that was one of my great disappointments with the trip to St. Louis a couple months ago for Father Reginald Wolford's ordination, is I just never got around to going confession to Father Reginald. I just thought that'd be spectacular, that a guy that I've been friends with from way back in the day, I've sold wine with, I've surfed with, I've drank beer and chased girls in a very chaste version of chasing girls, but, you know, trying to find someone to date, you know, and all that. And then been in a religious order with the guy, and then saw his, saw him get ordained Dominican. I really loved the idea of kind of the closure of going to confession to him, but I didn't get to do it while I was in town. So the next time I'm in St. Louis, I'm going to go to confession to, my friend, even if I don't have anything. So Father Riley, sometimes, you know, I'll just shoot him a message and he'll come down and he'll take me in the into the storage room here, and I'll literally watch the counter when it's slow and give my confession at the same time, because I just can't get out from behind the counter. So I drug Father Michael back there yesterday, and it was funny. Yesterday I had a pretty serious actual confession, a pretty intense confession that I needed to give someone. And I was going through some stuff, and I just really I needed a really solid confession. And it's funny, it's like I have the flip side of this priest and confession thing is, who do you want to give your confession to? Now, I have friends, so, you know, and I go through phases on this, but some people, they're like, oh, I'll go to a priest that I know if it's just like, you know, oh, you know what? I was kind of judgmental with this person because I'm super holy and I read the Bible all the time and I'm a kind of a big deal. But I think, you know, I might have been a little proud there. You know, I'm really just kind of, I'm kind of just tweaking and fine tuning that last little bit of holiness. But that's the confession you want to give to the friend. There's someone you know really well, you know, but when you got that, when you just like did that thing and you're like, oh man, I don't want my friend knowing that I did that. You know, it's like, yeah, I want to expose that vulnerable aspect of myself to a friend of mine. I'm the opposite. The worse my confession is, the more that I am just absolutely ashamed of wanting to go to confession. And I want someone that I have an established solid relationship with. And not just like the priest I go to frequently that I don't know, but I mean, I want that guy that I'm like friends with. And I was just going through some crap and I just needed to get it out. And I was like, when Father Michael walked in, I was like, nothing against Father Riley. I love him to pieces and we have a good solid friendship, but it's, you know, it's at a certain distance friendship. But Father Michael and I are really close friends. And so when I saw Father Michael walk in, I was just like, yes. I'm like, hey, don't take off until you've heard my confession. He said, yeah, no problem. So yes, I did the storage room confession in the middle of the, so I'm half, only in my life will you see someone half asleep, running a coffee bar, doing a confession in a storage room, and then riffing about it on a radio show. That's kind of defines my life. All right, let's get off to the break. And when we get back, I want to finish up that shift yesterday, and a really interesting interaction happened, and it's probably going to form the backbone for the rest of the show. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whitley.
I'm a sacred word to mutter, ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so far we've covered my insomnia, working 12 hours as a zombie propped up by caffeine, whether or not priests like to hear their friends' confessions, whether you want to give your confession to a friend who's a priest when it's really bad, or whether you want to go like, you know, and it's funny, part of me, I will say there are times when I'm kind of like, I go through phases on this. There's sometimes where I'm like, if I'm just not feeling solid in my relationships or whatever, it's like, and I've got a particularly ugly confession or just an embarrassing something, or I just like want to go to some church I've never been to, just go through the screen. And I think that's kind of good in some ways, in the sense that you're like, look, I'm giving my confession to God. I'm giving my confession to Christ. And you can find Christ in any of these little altar Christuses, these little other Christs, you know, that are the descendants of the apostles. His presence and his ability, his power to forgive sins is present in these priests, right? So, I mean, they're kind of interchangeable in a sense. But, you know, there's a... you know, in the classic spiritual direction world, if you're kind of confessor hopping based on kind of like you're hiding from your confessor something that you did because you have a regular confessor and you have some kind of fall and you hide that from him by kind of going to someone else, that can be like a real problem. You know, that could be a sign that there's some serious pride there, right? I think St. Francis de Sales talks about that at some point. One of the great spiritual writers talks about that. So I kind of make a habit that if I've kind of got my regular confessor, even if I didn't go to confession to him, I'll kind of like give him kind of the catch up on kind of how I've been doing lately, you know, kind of what I'm struggling with in this world, kind of what's going on, you know, how am I, you know, where am I tripping? Where am I falling? How fast am I getting up? That kind of thing. So that they're kind of caught up on the state of the union address, so to speak. And so, anyway, so I've talked about that. I talked about giving my confession to my friend in a storage room, which, I kind of like the storage room confession. I don't like it when it's been, I have made coffee in the seal of the sacrament because someone has came to the counter while I was a confession. I have to say, hold on a second, open the door, go out, make a coffee, come back and just pick up my confession where I started off. That's happened on more than one occasion. You may have gotten coffee from me if you live in Denver during the seal of the confessional. So don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody that I gave me, what that I made you that cappuccino. That isn't how it works. But all right. So I'm going along after, and so that was cool. So I got some fresh grace on me, and I'm exhausted, but I felt palpably better. That I really felt that sometimes I go in, go to confession, come out, and I'm like, I feel just as crappy as when I walked in. Sometimes I get a real kind of the phenomenology of the sacrament, if you want to use a big term, you know, I get to experience the thing. I get the feeling of it. I actually get I have an experience of the internal change that happens in you, you know? And so I kind of had that yesterday. I was like, oh, okay, kind of load off my back. Still super tired though, you know, cause you know, physical tiredness, spiritual tiredness, related sometimes, but not the same thing. And so this dude comes in yesterday off of Yelp, and we had a really interesting kind of philosophical exchange. I'm going to push pause on that and come back to it, because that's going to form the backbone of what I want to talk about for the rest of the show. So that kept me until like at well after when I normally would have been out of here. And my back was killing me, I guess, because I just didn't get good rest and recovery. I don't know. Maybe I was just like from sleeping on a softer bed than I'm used to over the weekend in Flint. But my back was killing me, and it was literally going into spasms while I was talking to this guy that came in. So I got off, went and got some food, and then went to the gym, sat in the hot tub, trying to like get this back worked out. So I did the hot tub, cold shower, steam room, cold shower, hot tub, cold shower thing. And it was kind of funny. So I had kind of a cool experience. So I went and got some food, like at Whole Foods next door to the gym. And I'm eating my brisket and my mashed sweet potatoes there. And I'm sitting behind two people. I'm sitting in the booth next to two people that are just speaking. They're having a really vigorous conversation in Spanish. And the Spanish was, I was getting the feeling they were probably from Spain or at least from South America somewhere, maybe not Argentina, but it wasn't Mexican Spanish. That wasn't the intonation and the lingo and stuff. But I just could not, but it was so fast that I didn't have to worry about eavesdropping. So I like it whenever there's people speaking another language that I'd barely know. Cause I can kind of sit and listen to them, but I'm not really eavesdropping, cause it's always so fast that I can't really make out what they're saying. I'm just like trying to do the grammar lesson and pick out words that I recognize and hear what they sound like on the fly in a native conversation. So I was kind of like, so I go get my food. I'm sitting there. My entire meal is encapsulated in Spanish. Right. So then I go to the car, get my gym bag, go over to my gym. And I go back, change, get in the hot tub, and there's these two old Russian guys sitting in there just speaking Russian. So it's like I'm sitting in the hot tub, and I felt like I was taking part in a different culture, because you know there's certain cultures where like bathhouses and kind of like the spa and the hanging out and talking, and you know they used to really be present like in our culture more like in big cities and stuff. In fact, there still is here in Denver. I think there's an old school bathhouse, like where you people go and the old guys go and sit and talk politics and sit around and you get smacked on. You know, I remember who was telling me the story. I think it was I think it was Adam Beach was telling me this story about going to a banya, like they call it, like going to this, like, was it a Turkish bath? It's like, you know, I'm just like getting like beat with these limbs and stuff. Just like, anyway, so hanging out in hot water and getting into cold water and getting smacked on or rubbed on or something like that in between is like a part of a lot of cultures around the world. And Russia is one of those cultures where kind of like steam and cold and stuff is kind of a thing, right? Probably no culture more than like the Nordic cultures, where it's like, you know, saunas and then ice cold water plunges and all that are kind of just considered a normal part of maintaining your health, you know? So it was just kind of cool. I'm sitting in the hot tub. I can't talk to anybody. I don't speak Russian. I know enough kind of Polish and a little bit of Bulgarian to, you know, to kind of make out a word here and there. I mean, he's, you know, the guy saying, yeah, he's saying, da, dobre, yeah, da. Yeah, he's like saying, yeah, good. Yeah, I can pick out a few little things like that. So there's two old guys sitting there. And then this young guy comes out. I mean, this dude is like a superhero. I mean, he's like all ripped. He's like some bodybuilder guy or something. He's like this super young kid with a baby face. He's just like, oh, it comes out of the sauna. He's all like just crazy ripped. And he sits down next to these two old fat Russian guys. And he's Russian too. And they're all just speaking Russian. So I got these three Russian dudes and me. And then like this couple comes in and sits down. And they're speaking Chinese or something. So I'm like literally off in the corner by myself, the only dude in the hot tub that speaks English. And then I go back in the steam room and, no one really talked except for that one time whenever I've told the story here where there was kind of the race summit in the steam room and everybody got tense because people were talking about race. No, people don't talk in the steam room. You just kind of sit there and breathe this eucalyptus steam and clear your lungs out, which is another thing I needed to do. I've been walking around on the edge of a sinus headache for a few days. But there's this old Asian lady that goes into the steam room, and she's got like this whole ritual, man. She's like goes out and she's got this old bucket. She gets some pool water and she rinses off her feet. She does this thing and she walks around. Then she comes back in and she stands up sometimes and she sits down. Then sometimes she's laying down and she's doing these stretches, and then she'll leave and she'll get her bucket of water. Like she's just like, she's there every time I go, like every night. This old Asian lady's there, and she's got like, I really want to like ask her, all right, so what's your routine here? What are you doing? You know? Anyway, so then I go back and I got back in the hot tub, and then there's like this young couple from like Argentina or something, and they were just talking like crazy in a totally different form of Spanish. So I had like a very international evening. I got the feeling of being like I felt like I went traveling. I felt like I got into a transporter and went a couple places or something, because I spent for about an hour and a half, but from eating to leaving the gym, just hearing like three or four different languages and never not having any conversation in English, not a drop of English. You know, it was kind of fun though, because you don't have to worry about overhearing people's conversations and stuff. So, I had a very international trip to the gym to try to get, and I made my back feel better. So I'm telling you, I kind of gotten off the cold shower thing for the last week or so. And I tell you what, man, I was glad to be back. I'm telling you, just try this. Lots and lots of breathing, hot shower, lots of breathing. Or if you go to the gym, get in the hot tub, lots of breathing, and then go and just like get yourself ready, step into a cold shower and just breathe through it, man. Take big breaths. Don't lock up and just kind of let it go through it, man. I'm telling you, it's invigorating, you know, it's super invigorating. I'm a fan. I don't want to do it for more than a couple of minutes. And I don't know if I could do the ice bath the way Miley and Schneer and those guys do. But I'm telling you, there's something about the hot cold thing. I mean, I got theories on this. All right. So when we get back, I want to tell you about an interaction I had and some ideas from it. You're listening to The Counter Position. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then how we crave a hanging and it's dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, we've covered insomnia. We've covered all the ins and outs of going to confession to friends. Talked about hot and cold. Talked about listening to people have conversations in languages you don't know. And so here, it gets kind of a theme. Conversations with people who speak a language you don't know. That's a theme, okay? Let me tell you, stop me if you've heard this one. So an atheist dude who's a free market conservative or a free market guy comes in off Yelp and walks into a Catholic coffee bar, and he starts talking about abortion with this dude. Oh yeah, no, it's not a joke. I mean, it literally happened last night. So I didn't do that very well. So I'm hanging out. It's like 5:30. It's like 4:30. We close at 5. And walks this young guy, and he orders a dark brown sugar rosemary cafe latte without looking at the menu, which 90% of the time means he found us on Yelp, because for some reason, this random drink that a couple years ago I saw in a coffee house in Missouri, and it was good, and I don't even like flavored latte. So I came back to Denver. I reverse engineered this syrup, figured out how to make it. It's super simple. It's a one-to-one brown sugar simple syrup with some fresh, infused with fresh rosemary. Not that hard. It has become like the drink we're like famous for. It's weird. People like straight up dig this drink. And there's a reason why. It's delicious. I know what you're thinking. Brown sugar, a savory herb, coffee, what? No, it actually works. It works really, really well. So this guy comes in. He orders the dark brown sugar rosemary cafe latte. And so I'm like, oh, you can't. He's you're off Yelp, right? So we start talking, and he's like, yeah, I found you on Yelp. Yeah, you know, so we start talking, and he's like, so what is this place? You know, and I tell him about the Augustine Institute, you know, and it's obvious a pretty Catholic spot. I mean, we have Catholic books and all these videos that we produce here, and teaching tools are like on shelves, and there's a giant icon inspired kind of painting of Jesus off in the corner and a crucifix on the wall. So, I mean, you don't have to look very far to figure out Catholic place. And we start talking about how, you know, it's kind of strange that, you know, you get kind of people come in, they don't know what they're getting into. And, you know, some people are kind of thrown off by it, you know. Oh, we were talking about Yelp reviews. I should probably go see if this guy reviewed me. He said he was going to. If he slammed me because I had a conversation with him, I'm gonna get mad. Anyway, so the guy comes in, and he was like, you know, we were talking about reviews, and I mentioned that, someone had kind of said, you know, what was it? Oh, I told him one of the reviews said, well, if you like drinking your coffee next to a giant picture of Jesus. And I'm like, really? And he thought that was really stupid. He's like, I mean, I'm not. He goes, I mean, I'm an atheist and I'm completely comfortable here. So, I mean, you know, I get. So then the guy basically just announces he's an atheist. You know, I'm like, all right, cool. You know, so let's have a conversation. You know me. And so we start talking. I'm like, yeah, you know what I mean? And I mentioned that I have a background in philosophy. Evidently, this dude's got a background in philosophy. So we start talking, and he brings up abortion. Now, 9 times out of 10, well, 99 times out of 10, if you have just these two basic categories, a young guy who's atheist and an older guy who's a conservative Roman Catholic, a traditional Roman Catholic, and they talk about abortion in a public space, that's just a bad idea for the most part, especially if they don't know each other and they haven't built a relationship, haven't earned the right to be heard with each other. You know, that's just usually not a good idea, not a good context, probably not the topic you want to start the conversation with. And this guy wanted to talk about it. I'm like, fine, it's cool. You know, so, but what was interesting is that we were kind of coming at it from a philosophy perspective. And he's coming at it from a kind of a fairly, he said free market, but kind of a more of a kind of a libertarian kind of perspective on this. And he wants to kind of define the whole thing through kind of the free agency. And, you know, he basically comes around to, he starts with rights and with, you know, kind of like control of your own body being the first kind of step of liberty and all this, and kind of ends up building an argument that, look, I mean, I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm not saying it's not horrible. I'm not saying it's not messy. I'm not saying it's I think it should be in a perfect world, every pregnancy would be wanted and intentional. And of course he tied that back to just birth control, but I'm like, wow, I've got a crazy idea. Family and thinking that people are not a bad thing. I didn't say that. But, and remember, I'm on almost no sleep. And I'm on the end of an 11 and a half, 12-hour shift, right? So he ends up defining all this. He ends up saying basically that unless up until a child is, you know, no longer kind of plugged in and dependent, that the woman kind of is the one who has control over things because she's the one who's the free, completely unattached, you know, actor in the thing, right? And I listened to the guy and I was sitting there thinking about, like, you know, a lot of people, including my former self at one point in my life, what I would have been saying to the guy and what I would have, you know, not have been able to kind of sit there and nod and go, yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, based on his premises where he started from, his conclusions were absolutely correct. I mean, from a logical perspective, if his premises were correct, then it flowed perfectly to his conclusions, right? But then I've been on this kick here, for a while now, but about moving the conversation backwards instead of moving the conversation forwards, right? Because this guy and I could have been like, no, it's a person. It's not. It's inside a woman. She has a right. You know, we could go back and forth like that. But I'm like, okay, whoa, let's pull back. Is kind of rights and agency and all that, is that the right place to start this conversation? Or rather, would it be a better place to start this conversation be starting about, well, what kind of thing is this? What is it? You know, Socrates would ask that question. What is it? You know, and I tried to at least get him to say, look, okay, if it's the kind of thing that's reached a stage of development that it could perfectly well be born and could survive outside of the womb, could we at least then say that it's a, could we at least back it up to there? And he was unwilling to go there, right? So we pulled the conversation back and we talked about whether you start with rights or whether you would start with kind of like essence and like what the thing is, the substance of a thing, to use Aristotle's word, to use the Latinized version, substantia. You know, what is it? You know, the you know, and whether or not, and so we start talking about this whole thing. And then he ends up saying, and it was really interesting because we got around to saying, I said, well, what if persons have ends? You know, what if we're the kind of thing that has an end? You know, what if there's a toward which in us and, you know, a meaning to our existence in some way, you know, something. And he kind of started, going to look, well, I mean, I don't know if there's like, you know, okay, yeah, maybe God's judgment or like in, you know, in the afterlife. I'm like, no, no, no. I'm like, let's state for just a premise, just for grins, that the soul is not eternal. And when we die, that's it. So we're not working for a moral reward or a moral punishment. I'm just talking on the strictly philosophical level. is if there is a, you know, our faculties are for something, right? And he admitted, our faculty, you know, teeth are for eating, stomachs are for digestion, butts are for pooping. Yeah, so that whole slippery, disgusting hole that goes to the middle of us is for putting things in, getting the nutrients out of them, and then getting rid of what we can't use, right? It's digestion, right? We have certain faculties. And it'd be interesting, we have all these different faculties that are ordered towards something, but as a whole, in the bigger picture of nature, we're not ordered towards anything. And he's like, well, I guess from evolution, you know, and the evolution of consciousness, well, let's leave consciousness out of it. But the evolution of, I mean, I'm like, well, we're mammals, right? To perpetuate the species, right? He's like, well, yeah, you know. And he says, to make more of a, yeah, great. I'm like, so wouldn't it seem that around these very issues that we're talking about the conception, gestation, birthing and rearing of members of our species, that wouldn't that be the place that we would want to kind of define some that would be a place where our toward whichness, our end would kind of show up, right? I mean, you're admitting that that's kind of, that's the bigger picture that we're ordered towards. And if we kind of thwarted that in some way, I'm not talking about morality, but as a, you know, if some monkeys refuse to make more monkeys, I mean, you go, ah, there's something off with them. Right. And he's, well, yeah, I guess kind of so, you know? So we started from there. And so it's like, I want to just kind of use this kind of off the cuff. And there was a way bigger conversation, and I'm not saying we had some big debate and I won some big debate. Nothing like that happened. I was just kind of giving you a few snippets of this conversation. We're up against the break. Let's go to the break and we'll finish this up. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then all the color glass that painter's palettes mash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. This is a very, very counterposition show. This is, I mean, my show is named after my position from which I view the universe, which is usually behind the counter. And you're getting the show recorded before I open a coffee bar. I'm going and doing... doing little bits of work during the break, and I'm telling you a story about a conversation that happened over the counter yesterday. Very counterposition show. This is what happens when you work in coffee bars. So what can we take from this now? Okay, I ended up thinking, now afterwards I got to thinking about this conversation I have with this atheist guy. We're talking about abortion, about what this thing is and how you kind of name something and what is the best rubric to look at something. Is it whether it's kind of through the lens of rights or whether it's through the lens of what is this thing? You know, I mean, is it a, you know, is it an actor? Is to be a person, to be someone who kind of can enact agency, you know? And we kind of got into this argument that you get about, is it a potential human? And he really wanted to play with the word potential. He kind of even wanted to say the sperms and eggs were potential humans. And I'm like, we had to talk about tissue and organism. What's a tissue? What's an organism? Is there a difference? What is living? How do you predicate an adjective of something? You know, we were talking about all that stuff. But from a strictly philosophical perspective and trying to kind of talk about all the stuff that leads up to a decision about whether or not this gruesome act of an abortion is some kind of moral outrage or not. Because like it or not, kids, in the modern world, as obvious to some of us as it might be that that's a human or that's a baby or whatever, it's like they think you can define something differently than that. Now, I don't I'm not saying that that's good. I'm not saying it's moral. I'm saying that there's been enough disinformation, and this isn't new. I mean, my God, the Romans used to go have a kid they didn't want. They would take it out and expose it. One of the things that early Christians do, they go save these kids that were exposed by the Romans. You know, it's like, so, I mean, and this happens in China now with the forced abortion policy and like on one child policy. You know, if you don't want to get a son the first time around, now there's demographic problems in some of these countries, like, or especially like in China, because there's too many guys and not enough girls, because everybody wants a son and they'll only let you have one. And so they end up having these sex selective abortions and stuff. So not saying that that's, I'm just saying that this isn't something in our, it isn't just greed and convenience in the suburb, which is kind of how we, you know, oh, these people are having cosmetic abortions because they are, you know, to fit their lifestyle or whatever. Historically and globally, there's been a lot of reasons that people have kind of let themselves define the products of conception, as they call it, in different ways, right? So I'm going to give the guy the benefit of the doubt that he's not a horrible human being that just wants to go around killing babies or whatever, because he's probably not. Most people are not when they disagree with you on that issue. So we're talking about this thing, and it got me thinking just about, you know, it's interesting that what he was doing was not making a far enough step from the animal to man, right? So Aristotle, so we got like, you know, like minerals and all this stuff, things that are not organisms at all. They're just base substances, not in the modern sense of the word. They're just, you know, things. They're just, well, that's a bad word too. They're not living. They're not organisms. They're just, you know, stuff, right? You know, it is something, but it's not growing or changing in any way in itself. It's just, it's the kind of thing that's tissue or something. It makes up something else. So like magnesium or something, you know? And then you have things that are organisms, right? And you got, you know, Aristotle talks about this, and, you know, he's, you know, for him, the soul is the form of the body. It is the, you know, the principle of motion and rest and hearing in a thing. And for him, motion includes kind of the coming to be of what the thing is. You know, the acorn becoming a tree is a motion. So he's not talking about running around all the time. So he says that, plants have a nutritive soul, right? Why? Because they're just kind of stuck in place, but they take in these things like magnesium and stuff, take in these parts, and they turn these parts into themselves, and so they take in nutrition, right? And then he talks about animals. They're animated. They're anima. They move around. They're basically feeding tubes on legs. So it's like if that tree could run around and chase down some minerals out of the soil and suck it in and then go over here where there's some other stuff, then it would be an animal, you know? But so a wolf can, instead of sitting around waiting for some nutrients to come along, a wolf chases the nutrients down and then grabs said nutrients out of the thing. Right. And then you get to man, right? Now, man is an animal. He does take in nutrition. But here's the difference is that, and this is what kind of got me interested in what this guy was saying. He was defining this defining what a fetus is and defining and making the unhinging and the unplugging of this fetus from the mom as a nutrient source as the definition of what it is, right? And there's the thing, is that man makes this step from what to who. And one way to look at that is man can no longer be defined by his source and his method of gaining nutrition. He can't, that isn't what defines him anymore. So that's one way to kind of look at it, right? So the thing is that looking at it from that perspective is an aspect of what I want to talk about here towards the end of the show. I want to say that we were talking about the ways of viewing the universe, the ways of viewing the world underneath our positions, underneath our views of why these things would possibly be moral or be immoral, instead of just talking about it straight on and just being way out here on the branches, so to speak. And it's like, well, I got this kind of fruit. Well, I got this kind of fruit. You know, we disagree. You got to pull back till you find something, and maybe not something in common, but you pull back to the point that you can find something you could have a conversation about where you don't have one of the two people who are just like so firmly ensconced in their position that no exploration of ideas and a free giving take can take place, right? And I think that I want to shift the conversation a little bit to this. And if there was a weird break in this segment, I made a mistake and hit a button and screwed everything up, and I had to start this. So I had to start this segment. Well, I start a new file here. So I'm technically inept and trying to do three things at once. So if we can pull back and talk about something that is the underlying. So I just wanted to tell the story of the guy that came in off Yelp, because here's an example. He and I could have just argued about that few minutes before a fetus is born. And I could have thrown all kinds of things that I find self-evident. He could have thrown all kinds of things at me that he found self-evident. But we pulled back until we started talking about how do we come to a criteria about to talk about what a thing is, and what's the right criteria to use to define what a thing is, and should what something is versus its relation to something else define what is the proper action towards that thing, right? I think that something that I want to talk some more about on the show, and it's something that I'm kind of building into this new project I'm working on in Flint, is the idea that we need to show our work. You know, like when you're in math class, when you go do an algebra thing and you just get down to X equals 8, right? And if you turn in, they give you a thing to solve and you turn in X equals 8. And they hand it back to you in high school. What do? They say, show me your work. Turn in your notes with it. They want to see how you got from this to X equals 8. It doesn't matter if you got the right. It doesn't matter if X, in fact, does equal 8. I mean, that matters. But the question is, how did you get there? I know when we were doing Euclid, I was never sharp enough to do this. I was basically memorizing the props and then figuring out how they worked, or ignoring them and freaking out. But there were people who would build alternate proofs for different Euclidean props, right? So there's different ways to get to the same end, right? So if you sit there and you just go x equals 10, and you just go, we're going to build the x equals 8 institute, we're going to build the x equals 10 institute, and we're going to like have a debate where we stand on stage and go x equals 8, no, x equals 10, you know, they don't get anywhere. And so I think we need to start, there's a whole way of approaching reality and a whole way of thinking about reality that undergirds the X equals 8 of the Catholic view of the universe, right? And I think that we need to start doing more with those presuppositions. Maybe this is, I've been eternally influenced by reading Francis Schaeffer when I was a kid and his need for a presuppositional apologetic. Maybe that's all I'm talking about. Maybe it's my latent, Ken Hensley pointed out my latent presuppositionalism one time. I really think that we need to have an apologetic of presuppositions. But all right, we're out of time. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place in marble stone. I take your place in marble stone.